welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, Chapel Hill actor John Felch plays 35 characters in this week's special Playmakers production that's called I Am My Own Wife. This play with the funny title won a Pulitzer and won a Tony. And while in the 2004 season, it was called the most stirring new work to appear on Broadway. It's called both moving and intellectually absorbing. A play that I think all of us will want to see. It's only going to be in town for a week, and so you're going to have to rush to see it. John Felch, who is the actor who plays these 35 different roles in the play, and the production director, Judy Fischel, both are here to tell us about how this character becomes his own wife.
Oh, yeah. Where to begin on this? It's an interesting evolution, this play. The playwright includes himself as one of the characters in the play. He had a friend, a childhood friend from Texas, where Doug Wright, the playwright, grew up, who was a bureau chief of U.S. News and World Report in East Berlin when the wall came down. And he wrote to the playwright, Doug, saying, I met this character that you've got to come and meet. And it turned out it was a man, Lothar Berfelder, who had lived as in women's clothing through the Weimar period, the Nazi period, and the communist period in East Berlin, and managed to survive, and also had started her own museum called the Grundzeit Museum, which was a specific collection of objects and furniture from 1890 to 1900 in Berlin in German manufacturing, and kept this in this big house, this museum, and people would come and look at this collection. And also in this house in the basement she had recreated a Weimar bar restaurant that had been one of the last gay establishments before the Nazis and communists took over. So it's this unbelievable story of survival that this person went through. And so in the course of telling this story, the playwright creates all the characters in this person's life. And Charlotta von Malsdorf, that's the name she took for herself.
So you're going to play the Charlotta?
Yeah, her. And then Doug Wright, the playwright, John Marks, his friend, who's the U.S. News and World Report guy, and a myriad other German and American soldiers, just tons of characters.
So the principal character is both gay and a cross-dresser. Is that
right? Although one of the many interesting things about Charlotta was she wasn't particularly interested in sex per se. He always felt from the time he was, I think, about 8 years old, when he had an aunt he was visiting her house, and he put on girl's clothes that he found in a closet. And it turned out she was a lesbian, his aunt, and she was there to help him through this identity crisis, which makes it, of course, doubly odd. I mean, you think back then in Germany, that and that era, what people's reaction to those things must have been. But anyway, yes, he had no desire to be a transsexual, to
get
operations.
He didn't want an operation.
No, just
he wanted to be a man who liked to dress in women's clothes.
Yes.
And he liked to pretend. He liked you guys. He's an actor. He wanted to pretend to be a woman.
Well, and he part of, I think, what motivated that was that he had a brutal, brutal father who was a Nazi during the war. And the father was just horrible to him. And so I think he and his experience of men in general as a boy was very negative. And he perceived the men as very violent. And so that, I think, is part of the influence.
It's funny for me because now that I'm getting old, I can look back and see that we've gone through quite a transformation in terms of our society's attitudes towards gay and lesbian people, and towards people who like to do these crazy things about cross-dressing. It's not generally more accepting and more tolerant.
Yeah,
generally speaking.
What,
historically in Germany, through these wild transitions in government, all the way from the emperor to the Republic, right. the great democracy, to Nazism and then communism in East Berlin. How did these different societies or the rulers of these societies react differently?
It's interesting. The play touches on that, but not as much as it might, on other, because it's more of personal journeys. But in the Weimar period of Germany, you know, the Emperor Wilhelm period, there was an action. It was quite a scene. You know, I don't know if you've seen the movie Cabaret, or certainly based on the Christopher Isherwood and other people.
It was almost
really
like you said, we need somebody strong like Hitler to come clean up this
place. Was a very decadent period, especially in Berlin. And there were, you know, boy bars and a lot of transvestism and things like that, which, of course, the German expressionistic art kind of grew out of that as well. But that having been said, that was very specifically Berlin, parts of Berlin, and certainly not, you know, greater Germany or Prussia. But then, of course, the Nazis took a very dim view of any homosexual activity, and as did, of course, the Soviet communists. I mean, people were persecuted, killed for that choice.
But you've already told us that at least during the communist times, after the Second World War, Charlotte was able to hold court and have her museum and his museum.
But here's where we get into another bit of mystery, and this is part of what the play explores, is that we find out that Charlotte, they release Stasi files, the Stasi were the secret police in East Germany, and it turns out she was complicit. She evidently reported on fellow antique dealers, including a very dear friend. And so we don't know exactly what she did in terms of compromise of her own integrity. And did she, in fact...
We just know that she was on the records of the Stasi.
Yes, exactly. And part of what the playwright has to come up against after he has this kind of idol worship of the fact that this person, you know, made this very brave choice in a threatening time, then has to confront what was this horrible moral and ethical dilemma. What did this person do to survive?
Well, I don't want to get too much off topic, but East Germany is an interest to me, and I've just found so many of my new friends have had to confess that as a part of continuing to operate a church or a school or whatever enterprise, that you had to make some kind of compromises.
Mm-hmm.
What it did to me was to say, what kind of compromise am I making in this society in order to do the things that I think are good? Let's not get into confession.
But there is a scene, actually. There's a scene in the play that where this whole issue is wrestled with directly in text. There are characters in the play that are interviewed on a talk show, not unlike
what we're doing
right now, that actually come forward and say that, look, one in three people, it's just a fact that, don't you say that, one in three mm-hmm. people, Brigitte Klench is the character's name, but she says, it's everybody knows that you had to be complicit, you had to sell people out, you had to, in order to hold on to what you had, it would have been foolish not to play the game.
That was the organization of society.
That's right.
Yes.
In East Germany during those times.
Right.
Yes.
And so even if you're a deviant on the edges,
mm-hmm.
you might be able to work out a deal mm-hmm. to stay in business if you did it right. And this, Judy Fischel, mm-hmm. tell us a little bit. You're the director of this play.
Uh-huh.
Now you got one actor. How do y'all do this?
I chose a good actor. You know,
thank you.
I mean, I wouldn't have done this with just, you know, you. It's like doing any major play, especially a play where the character's name is the title of the play. You don't do Hamlet without a Hamlet. You don't do Lear without a Lear. You know, you have to have, in this case, the wife. You have to have someone who can be his own wife. You have to have someone who can play cross gender, cross ages. I mean, all of these characters are a variety of ages, a variety of genders, a variety of life experiences.
Lots of accents too.
Lots of. I mean, his German is wonderful. We actually, the inception of this production, came when Playmakers wanted to take a show to the Stoneleaf Theater Festival in Asheville. And so toward the end of our last season, John and I began to work on this as a festival entry. So we really haven't had a Chapel Hill production yet. So we're very, what's so exciting about September 13 through 17 at the Keenan Theater is that John is actually able to perform this piece again that he played to rave reviews in at Stoneleaf.
So the people in the western part of the state know about this
even
more than the Chapel Hill people. I wonder
that's
if
right.
we feel like this is sort of analogous to the pre-Broadway productions, or was your first production the big one, and now in Chapel Hill we're on the road.
Not at all.
No.
Not at all.
No.
I mean, part of what was great about, having Stoneleaf was we didn't know at that point that we would be doing it here for Playmakers.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And so it's just it's a big bonus to be able to do it here. And the other thing is, this is the sort of inaugural performance of what the new artistic director of Playmakers, Joe Hodge, who's an old buddy of mine from grad school here at UNC, he wants to start a second season. They haven't really, I don't think, named it yet, but it's going to happen in the Keenan Theater, which is the smaller space at Playmakers. And at least 2-3 times a year, he wants to do edgier work that might not be appropriate
for the
bigger
regular
theater.
Season, but edgy.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and we'll talk some more about this edgy production that we have a chance to see this week in Chapel Hill. I'm talking to John Felch, who's the actor, and Julie Fischel, who is the director of I am my own wife. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm talking to John Felch and Julie Fischel from our Playmakers group. I guess, John Felch, you're a member of the Playmakers family, but you're in and out.
That's right. I was here in the 80s. I went to grad school here, and back in those days, the actors of the graduate program used to do quite a number of roles on the Playmaker stage, so that was a great good fortune I had to. It was really my artistic home, this place, and where I, kind of grew up as an actor. So I did a lot of shows back then here. And then I moved away and did stuff here and there. And then I moved back here with my wife and son about 3 years ago. And since then I've done, I guess this will be like my fourth production with Playmakers. And I directed a couple of grad student projects. And so I've kind of been in and out, like more of a freelance artist. But coming up, I'm going to be doing a lot more. And I'm thrilled about that, actually.
We have captured him.
Have you netted him, Julie?
Yes, we've captured him.
Mm-hmm. Julie, you're a member of the regular Playmakers company. Mm-hmm. And it interesting to me, you're directing. We know you as an actress. Mm-hmm. In every year we get to see you several times, all and in very different roles. What's it like to be directing?
Well, I've actually done quite an amount of directing, but not at Playmakers. I also teach in the Department of Dramatic Art, which is part of my appointment there, and work a lot with the students. Last year I did a really wonderful production of The Cradle Will Rock by Mark Blitzstein with co-production with the music department, the first co-production between music and drama in 30 years.
It was a really terrific. I mean, it was a big, big production, too.
It was a big production.
Mm. Well, I don't want to get too much off topic from the play that we're talking about, but let's stay off topic for just a moment.
Right.
And I think many of us who love the Playmakers wonder why there is no, there's no music there. And is this a precursor, maybe, that you all will persuade Joe Hodge to do some music, musical production? Or is it impossible, given the circumstances, to do
well,
this?
Well, no. I think the wonderful, wonderful thing about Joe Hodge is he has just come on board with such a spirit to find out what this community is and what the community craves, and to utilize all the resources, not only under our roof, but around us on campus and in the community. And he's made a contract, I think, with the community to bring a fresh air into the building and to bring new experiences into the building. And I know for a fact, John had mentioned that our production is the inaugural production of the second stage, that Joe is very much invested in bringing in work and also working within the Arts Carolina Performing Arts, Emil Kang's office, and, you know, bringing things perhaps to our building that might be better served, that are music things that might be happening now in Memorial Hall, but might be something where a more intimate setting, either the Paul Green or the Keenan, would be more appropriate. So I think, in essence, then, our loyal Playmakers audiences, and I must say, I mean, our audiences are the best. And I'm always amazed at the loyal, how loyal people are, and I always appreciate it when people approach me in the community and speak up and identify themselves as subscribers and say their piece in terms of like wanting more music and things,
or
because
what they didn't really like.
Well, we do hear that too, but well, it's a wonderful. Yeah. But I do think that more and more, and you'll hear from Joe, I'm sure, at some point, even probably on this program, mm-hmm. about some of the things that he's cooking up and the wonderful.
It's a really exciting time mm-hmm. to be there. Really,
well, that's
is.
Exciting mm-hmm. for us to know, and mm-hmm. it prompts me to ask the question: since this is the inaugural mm-hmm. second stage for mm-hmm. Edgy Productions, mm-hmm. what is it about this thing that is so edgy that it's not right for primetime, but goes into the edgy? Second stage.
I'm not sure that that's necessarily true of this play. I mean, this play actually has played big stages all over the country. I think in this particular instance, this play was not slotted into the season mm-hmm. because we were doing it for the festival, but they had no way to know whether it was going to be a hit or not. But also, it just, there isn't a slot for it in the normal Playmaker season. So, but it also happens that the Keenan Theater is a wonderful space for this play because it has more intimacy mm-hmm. and because the audience is sort of wrapped all the way around the event, the museum that Charlotta runs. So, but it is, I guess it's an unusual place, certainly in the sense that, you know, like up at Asheville, I'd see the husbands that were dragged to the theater by their wives. and I'd look at their faces and looking at me in a dress thinking, oh, God. And then almost invariably by the end, they were the first ones on their feet. So, you know, it's that kind of a play. It's a little odd and threatening at first. Mm-hmm. But then the more you get to know these characters, the more it sucks you in. But,
well, okay, so you all have come around. It is edgy.
Yeah.
And it's appropriately on this second mm-hmm. stage, and it's mm-hmm. going to be a little bit more intimate. It's now, some people complain that it's stodgy in the play. You know, it's too formal, mm-hmm. and it's not going to be that way in the second stage.
No. And in fact, ultimately, on the primary stage, I don't think it'll be that as much. I mean, if that's what people have felt about it. I mean, what's kind of wonderful, as Julie was saying, is that, you know, there are as many opinions, you know, in the audience as there are amongst us as artists about what kind of plays we want to do.
That's right.
It's very hard.
This is not North Korea. I mean, we do disagree.
There you go.
Absolutely.
And it's great to have that healthy debate.
There is an audience out there for material that we're not really getting in the theater.
Yeah.
And I think that's important. I think that it's important that we do work that brings in people that haven't come. A play like this, I know, part of, again, the impetus, very, very smart and wonderful of our publicity and marketing team at Playmakers to really notice that the Gay and Lesbian Film Festival is happening in Durham as we do our production. So really wanting very much to tie into, here's a community of people that would find this story very compelling. And, you know, not that you always compartmentalize stories. That the reality is there will be people that read that the story is about a transvestite in Germany and probably not be interested. And that's okay. That's okay. But I think what John's saying is, you know, it's a universal story. Hence the Tony, hence the Pulitzer. I mean, there's something magical about it. That, and also to watch one person transcend, who's a performer, transcend and negotiate the terrain of 35 people in front of you, sitting maybe, if you're in the Keenan, maybe a foot away from you as they do it, is very exciting. I mean, the Keenan is that close, so you can see the subtlety with which it takes John to negotiate those changes, those switches, because ultimately John becomes this amazing body and voice and what, two arms and two legs and two ears and a nose, but he becomes so much more than that in front of you, you know?
Julie, let me ask you this. This is just sort of a technical question, but in some dramatic productions, the custom is that once the play opens, the director sort of takes a backstage and
it's
not developing anymore. When you all have done this production, did you back away when it was produced at the festival
in that case, or was it
under development all the time?
No, I did. I mean, I find in some, you know, I have to say that this being my professional directing debut, it's been easier to stay away. I think with my students, I'm a little more mother henny, and it's a little harder for me to sort of keep out of that mix. I do consciously, but I don't hang around. I mean, I do see their shows every night, but I saw John's opening in Asheville, and then I stayed for the second matinee, and then I left. He and Sarah Smiley, our wonderful stage manager, really just kind of sent me emails and told me how it was going. And I could see when we went back into rehearsal on Saturday again to remount the production, that John had already, he'd found so many new and wonderful things. I think my work, technically my work is done.
Let me ask you this. John then felt freedom to develop the character as he did it in front of an audience without your help. And then he brings it back and it's no longer yours. Do you all start over and have a little dialogue about this?
No.
Or do you just let him go?
No, because he's deepened everything that he started with. I mean, everything has been deepened. And in fact, we trust each other enough. I mean, he basically came into rehearsal and said, you know, this didn't ever feel right. We did have a very fast process. And so we both got together and looked at changing a few things for this, for the remount. There's always more work to be done, but no, I don't feel covetous of it in the least. I think it's his baby now, you know? And he's responsible.
That's
like
a two-edged sword. Wow.
I think your name's going to be on the program.
Yes,
baby.
My name.
But you know, I mean, I got to say, you know, it's been a joy to work with Julie. I mean, apart from the fact that she's so smart and trusting and, you know, and really did shepherd me through this thing in a way that took remarkable diligence on her part. But see, she's an actor as well as a director, so which actors will tell you they almost always prefer an actor director, someone who really knows what your process is and how to help you, you know, and that's exactly what she's done.
When you saw the play, when you read the play,
yes, yeah,
and decided that you all would do this, what leapt out at you as you thought about how you would stage it?
Well, this play actually has a rich history for me, because when I was in New York, I was in New York City in 2004 with a Birchfield Research Seminar program that I led 14 undergrads to study for a semester on site in New York. We saw 40 plays. We had class at Juilliard, my alma mater, and it was a wonderful semester. And one of the plays that we went to see was I Am My Own Wife, the original production on Broadway with Jefferson Mays. And so my first introduction to this play was not reading it, it was actually seeing it. And it was absolutely breathtaking, of course, from so many angles. I just think, even if you're not a theater person, this story is absolutely fascinating.
And you think right then we got to do this?
I kept thinking, I wish I were a man, you know, because hey, I can never play it. I mean, I guess you could.
I guess you could go the other direction.
You probably could, but it's a little bit of a woman
pretending to be a man, pretending to be a woman.
That's a typical actor's response, yeah. You know. But no, I did think it was a perfect show for playmakers in terms of the content, the depth of the content, the writing was spectacular. And it takes a tour de force performer. It's not everyone can pick this up. I mean, it needs to be someone who's trained and as John is, and has had a career under them. John has a wonderful career under him. He left here and didn't fall off the face of the earth. He made a huge mark as a company member at the Alley Theater in Houston. He's worked in New York. He's worked at all the major regional theaters in this country. Wow. So, you know, he comes to this seasoned and ready to actually open his mouth and have this work. And you need an actor like that. So,
Julie Fischel is the director of the Playmakers production for This Week and This Week Only. The title is I Am My Own Wife, and the actor who plays 35 different parts is John Felch. He's with us too, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. I'm visiting with John Felch, who is the principal actor in the current Playmakers production. It's a one-week production only of a play called I Am My Own Wife. John plays 35 different characters, and the director of the production is Julie Fischel, who is with us as well. We're talking about this edgy play.
Edgy and complex, and you know,
funny.
And I think what's so fascinating about it, you know, we talked just a minute ago about when I saw it for the first time, but I think what's amazing is today we sit at home with our channel changer and we flip around and we can see 35 characters very quickly on television and different realities and things pop in and out. It's one thing though to sit in a live theater breathing the same air with other people and watch one performer really cover the vast terrain of so many characters at once in one body and cover history before our eyes. He covers memories from his youth in the 30s in Germany all the way through really the death of Charlotta in 2002. So you're getting all kinds of just this the terrain that you can cover in a space where people are sitting together breathing the same air, where there is no electronic, there's no sound bite, there's no camera. It's all done, and our imagination flies with it. I mean, the theater is a seeing place. It's a place where we that's really thing we have to offer. I think modern society is it's not going to be like watching TV, and it's going to be even more incredible to watch one person in front of us go through all these changes.
Well, Julie, tell us this story, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You saw the story. You saw the play.
I did
when it mm-hmm. was winning. A Tony in New York and a Pulitzer Prize.
Yes.
And getting rave.
Yes.
These deep, not just kind of this is a great entertainment, but this is important. It's intellectual and yet it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
All of these things. So, and you said, okay, I want to do this play sometime.
I would have loved to have worked on it,
How did you then monkey it around so that you got the Playmakers to
I do didn't it? Monkey it around. I mean, ironically, I really, at that time, the leadership at Playmakers, who really wanted to make a commitment to doing Stoneleaf, came to me and said, we know that, you know, people had watched that I'd done a lot of directing. I directed the North Carolina Women's Prison Project, several of their shows. I directed a Duke faculty consortium. I've done
a
fair amount of directing.
Said,
so they're seeing, well, Julie's doing all this directing. And it was very nice of them to come to me and ask me if I would be interested in doing this
now,
project.
Had they chosen the play or did you?
Yeah, they were set on I Am My Own Wife. So I wasn't pitching this
script. So you
were
thrilled.
I was thrilled, yeah, because I thought it would be an ultimate challenge.
Now, but again, unusual in the sense that this is not the typical play where you're directing a group. Did you have any reservations at all about doing this one person?
No, I think the only not really. I mean, I would say through this process, John and I have gotten to know each other even better. I mean, we had done The Front Page together and Cyrano together.
Right.
And really had only known each other for a season. But I would say that...
Excuse me for interrupting.
Yeah.
Did you make him try out for the play or did you just say
Well, no. I mean... I was actually asked to approve the casting, which, you know, there were a couple of names on the table at that point of people. And I just said, well, of course, I do think John would be perfect.
And was he as good as you thought he'd be, or was he even better? How do you... I'm sorry, just trying to get you off base. You're so...
I'm so poor.
Careful.
Careful. No. Yeah, I mean... I sensed that, you know, I could almost at times begin to give a note and John just knew where I was going with it. I really think I am an actor's director in that sense. You know, I'm not really interested in putting my stamp on something. Perhaps I'm not the ultimate uber director, the person that sits around and has scripts in their house and says, I must do this play this way, you know. I don't do that. I think I am an actor's director because I really do imagine myself inside the story. So perhaps having one person to be with for that time made it extra fulfilling.
So you guys, you're the director, and now you've got the actor. And what do you do? What's next? Do you sit down and read the play together, or do you? How does that work?
You mean to begin the process?
Yeah, and what's the first thing you do together?
We read the play. Yeah. I mean, we sat and we read the play.
You sat and read it out loud?
Yeah, we read it around.
Other, or did you?
We sat around the
table. You listened to him read it?
It's professional rehearsal, so the same kind of rehearsal structure that we do with any production, regardless of the number of characters. We sit around and read it. We have a dramaturg that works on
discuss,
it.
Discuss, whatever historical whatever research we have to bring to it, and then eventually after what we call table work, we'll get up on our feet and start to try to make it physical.
And we have objects, of course. We have to talk through the objects that are needed and talk about the terrain. And of course, I'm meeting with the set designer and the costumer and costume designer, lighting designer, props person separately in production meetings, aside from John. Although we had you at a couple of meetings because it was important because this was going to be his universe. So it was very important to me that these things be comfortable for him.
Julie's told us that she had seen the play and liked it and was ready and raring to go. From your standpoint, how did you get approached to consider being in this play? And
I was delighted. We were doing Cyrano, in fact, at that point at Playmakers, and I got a call from the general manager, saying, "Would consider doing this?" And I was thrilled because I'd never seen it, but I had read it, and I have a very dear friend who had just done it in Cleveland and in Miami and several other places, and to great success with it, and he had been saying to me, you really should get a crack at this. It's a wonderful thing.
So you
wonderful
were glad
thing.
To get the chance
thrilled.
To do it.
I mean, it's one of those deals that they don't come along that often.
But now, I Am My Own Wife, in which you play 35 characters, different characters, and are the only person on the stage. You have to carry the whole thing, and in effect, this is what I keep thinking about. I'm a politician. I try to memorize a 30-second spiel, and you've got to learn this hour and a half, two hours worth of dialogue. Now, tell me about that.
Yeah, well, I got to say, it used to be easier when I was younger. But it is still drilling things over and over and over again. And I have a very patient wife and son who helped me by either listening to me mumble through the night, or help me sometimes run lines. But I do have a facility for it. I mean, which has been honed over many years. I mean, it's what we do. Yeah. I always tell people,
but 2 hours.
It's kind of like muscle. It's muscle memory. It's a kind of like an athlete has a very particular set of muscles that are trained to do a particular task, and an actor, one of the muscle sets is that memorization. For me, I also talk about the kinesthetic way you memorize as an actor, which is once you start to move with it and you have an idea, a physical
it all goes together.
Connection. Yeah, it really does.
Well, let me ask you this because we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to come back and I'll give you a warning. I'm going to ask you to go into the middle of the play and give us a line or two. We'll see if you can do that without the build up to it. We're talking about this wonderful play, I Am My Own Wife, Tony and Pulitzer Prize winner. It's playing in Chapel Hill, Playmakers production only this week. John Felch and Julie Fischel, and I'll be right back. Back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. We're talking about the Playmakers production for this week and this week only, a play called I Am My Own Wife. It's an edgy play, and Chapel Hill actor John Felch plays 35 different characters. Julie Fischel from the Playmakers has directed the production. And John, this is edgy. It's, for those who joined us late, it's about a transvestite cross-dresser, gay German.
That's right, who lived through... lived through the Weimar period, the Nazi period, and then the communist period in East Berlin, and managed to get through all of that amazing time as this transvestite who ran a museum, which she began in this big old mansion in East Berlin that was full of amazing artifacts.
We've been talking about the difficulty that you must have had in learning the lines that will take you for 2 hours worth of continuous conversation with yourself. And can you give us, can you just get into one of the scenes and give us a little bit of, I wish I'd seen it so I could prompt you to
take us there. Yeah, I'm just trying to think. It's so... there's so many.
How does she describe herself to how does she introduce herself to the audience?
At one point she says, "Willkommen in meinem Gründerzeitmuseum. Welcome to my Gründerzeitmuseum. Here, people can always come to see my collection. Everything from the Gründerzeit. This was the period in Germany between 1890 and 1900. Wie soll ich sagen? The gay 90s." And like that. But she, we actually have tapes of the playwright with this woman, man-woman, Charlotte von Malsdorf, and there are extensive tapes that I listen to of these charming interviews. But, you know, she sounds like your grandmother.
But basically, she speaks English, but with a heavy German
accent.
Slipping into German. Can you do that just a little bit? I'm so fascinated about being in the Gründerzeit in the...
Well, she says, you see, this old door is not original. Nein, I took it from a house on Prenzlauer Street before the Russians blew up the houses. I took such things. And on like that. And she collects all of this fantastic, and a lot of it's damaged stuff, but as she says later on in the play, you never throw anything away. It's all a piece of history. And she herself, as far as the playwright's concerned, is a piece of history as well.
Does the play take you back into time?
Yes,
you get
yes.
to know her through your acting as a younger person.
She does,
or he,
yeah.
Or he,
yeah,
he
you,
or her
you do
or
have these kind of flashbacks in her.
Can we have
life.
A flashback? Can you take us back to when she was a youth or he
was a youth? Well, let's see.
When the bombs fell.
Oh, yeah. Well, during the during the Second World War, when the. During the end of the war, it was the most dangerous time for me because I refused to carry a weapon or wear a uniform. My hair was long and blonde. I wore my mother's coat and the shoes of a girl. And so I was, like we say auf Deutsch, like the Jews. We were a freiwild, wild game. And she goes on and on about walking in the streets of Berlin and all the houses are rubble. She says all houses were broken and the streets full of rubble. And you would walk in the streets and the Russian planes would come with the splatter bombs. And this was dangerous because wherever you were standing, the bombs shatter in the earth and the pieces were everywhere. And on and on and on about the amazing things she survived.
Well,
so many people did.
Now, lived under Weimar Republic, under Hitler.
Yep.
Under the
GDR.
German Democratic Republic, the East German Republic. Was he a loyal German? Communist? A Nazi? How did it work?
By no means a Nazi. In fact, at one point, she says, I never had a radio or a television, but everyone wanted radios but why would I want a radio to hear Hitler babble? No, thank you. You know, so it's clearly an apolitical animal, but certainly, you know, knew those regimes were by no means friends to someone like her. And just managed to try to avoid, you know, the government and the political structure as much as possible.
Well, there is a little dimension, if you could give us a hint of it, because we've only got a minute, about the cooperation with the East German authorities.
Yeah, and then, of course, it gets revealed that she did, in fact, cooperate with the Stasi, the secret police in East Germany during a period of the 70s. And so it becomes, for the playwright and thus for the audience, an ethical dilemma. What do we make of the compromise this person made to survive?
Well,
and how many people, you know, did the same?
Julie Fischel, this is your professional directing debut, but what's next for you in the Playmakers?
John and I are both in The Underpants by Steve Martin, directed by the wonderfully celebrated Broadway director, film icon director, Gene Sachs, who's back to direct. And we just came from rehearsal, and I think it's going to be pretty funny.
So you're rehearsing and producing all at the same time.
Yeah, we're a little tired.
We are.
Well, thanks for joining us and getting us ready for this great play, I Am My Own Wife. We've been talking to actor John Felch and director Julie Fischel. Thanks to all y'all for listening. We'll be back same time tomorrow.